Every May 1st, workers around the world take to the streets, marching in solidarity, marching to raise awareness about the plight of the worker. While problems remain and more work has to be done, a lot has already been accomplished. For every improvement that was made, there were men and women who had to lay the groundwork. One such woman was Leah Roback. With a career of political and social activism spanning 7 decades, Leah Roback was a pioneer in the struggle to protect the rights of working men and women in Quebec. From the factory floor to the picket line, Leah's commitment to social and economic justice never wavered. Today, we look back on that life in her own words. But without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel could turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong. Solidarity.
Solidarity forever. I wanted to continue my work in doing what I felt I could do. I can't make miracles, but I felt a worker has a right to what we call today a union. And the union people are supposed to look after the workers. But there's one thing I know now. There are still some union people who say, well, I do what I can. That's when you're looking after someone, you don't have the attitude, I'm doing what I can. You do more because they are not able yet to take hold of the reins.
Montreal, with two-thirds of the ladies' garment industry within her borders, is capital of the Canadian fashion trade. Skilled fingers and busy machines meet the country's demands for evening dresses, bathing suits, stylish coats, and kitchen aprons. Jeanette Gagnon is a sewing machine operator. Her work is usually neat and accurate, but lately Jeanette has been bothered by headaches and eye strain. Sewing is close work, and sometimes the needle blurs away, a seam is spoiled, and she feels tired and sick.
Throughout the beginning of the 20th century, Montreal was the capital to a thriving industrial economy, centered around the textile and garment industries. While women represented between a quarter and two-thirds of Montreal's workforce, they did so with little, if any, political, religious, or social approval. Civil and religious authorities considered the working woman to be sinful. They were accused of stealing jobs from their male counterparts, of neglecting their domestic responsibilities, and of undermining the very fabric of society. Accepted or not, women were essential to the economy. The garment industry, in particular, depended on a largely female workforce to work long hours for little, if any, pay. According to labor historians, the exploitation of women workers was essential to Quebec's economy. Women worked longer hours but earned half the salaries of their male counterparts. Factory owners and government officials did little or nothing to improve the situation.
Marielle had been attracted to the dressmaking industry by natural calling and aptitude. In fact, the inborn talent for needlework of thousands of French-Canadian girls like her had made her city into the capital of the nation's garment industry. So that here in the heart of Montreal, on St. Catherine, on St. Lawrence, on Phillip Square, hundreds of dressmaking shops turn out 2 out of 3 Canadian dresses.
The rights of the worker, particularly the female worker, were not a priority. It was a priority to Leah. Having returned from Berlin, where she was exposed to Marxist and socialist ideas, Leah not only opened the first Montreal Marxist bookstore, she also turned her attention to the exploitation of Montreal's garment workers.
I was working in the needle trade.
Okay.
In the factory. women were working in factories. 10 cents an hour, 12 cents an hour. And it wasn't enough. Why, they used to work 10, 12, 15 hours a day. They'd go home, they were exhausted, they couldn't eat. I went in there to see. That's the only way you can organize in a union. If you can see with your eyes how the workers are rushed faster, 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 and they never worked fast enough. The foreman stood there, or the time study man. God, I hated those bastards. Oh, they stood there and time studied you. I made his life miserable. He deserved it. You know, had I not gone to work in a factory to see how it was, my imagination could never fulfill the fact that what a worker with his two hands on a machine and that foot on the pedal from 7:30 in the morning, and we had 10-minute rest period. Well, by the time you left your machine, and you had to leave it in order, and went upstairs to get a cup of lousy coffee, for which you paid, the boss didn't pay for it, you were just dead, and you had to go back to that bloody machine. The guy who was at the timekeeper, time study man, he had the key to the machine. And he put it on, and fast. And I said to him, "Do you want to kill us? Go ahead, keep doing it that way, and you'll have corpses here." He said, "Don't be dramatic." I said, "I'm not being dramatic, I'm being realistic." And he looked at me. He says, "You're a communist? I don't care what you call me, but you're not going to be pushing me and our workers there." He says, "Oh, you're going to bring a union?" "Not in this factory." I said, "We'll see." I said, "Do you want to bet on it?" He said, "Sure."
She never was afraid of the goons and the ginks and the company finks and the deputy sheriffs that made the raid. She'd go to the union hall when a meeting it was called, and when the company boys came around, she always stood her ground.
Leah started to recruit workers to join the International Ladies Garment Workers Union. Organizing a union in those days would be a long and difficult process. Unions faced opposition, not only from management, who feared an empowered workforce, and the prospect of having to improve wages and working conditions. They were also met with skepticism and fear from the workers themselves. Coming out of the Depression, with its rampant unemployment, many workers felt that a bad job was better than no job at all. The political and social climate of the province was also distinctly anti-union. The wave of anti-communist sentiment that swept across North America was also felt in Quebec. Under the leadership of Maurice Duplessis, the Union Nationale government cracked down on anything it viewed as subversive. Under Duplessis' padlock law, people were routinely arrested for participating in communist or socialist activities, or even for owning socialist literature. It was often guilty by association, and the unions and their leaders were at the top of the list.
I wanted to continue my work in doing what I felt I could do. I can't make miracles, but I felt a worker has a right to what we call today a union. The union is supposed to look after the workers. The bosses have their way of looking after themselves. Bit by bit, the workers saw that there was a union, and it was there for them to use and not to be afraid. It took a lot of time. The workers, we prepared my job. They weren't used to that. And they even were afraid to belong to the union. I told them, don't be afraid. They'll try to make you afraid by saying you'll lose your job and you won't be able to get another job because the trade will know that you were thrown out because of the union. It wasn't easy for them. They weren't used to it. But it's the way they've been brought up, that a boss is someone high, way up high. Mm-hmm. A boss is not any higher than you are. But you see, it's the way you've been brought up. We had a long time of hard work to make them feel the union is there to protect them, not the boss. But a union, you know, is made of people. And some people are honest, and some people will let certain things go by. And I was a very strong-minded person. And I said, we have a union. The workers have to come to us and make their complaints. But don't go to the boss and say, oh, I can't do that, and so on. Because the boss doesn't care. He'll throw you out and get another worker. But you need your job. So you don't go to the boss, you go to the union. You see, we cannot force. There are people who are afraid of their shadow. Well, they won't say boo. Well, we can't do anything with her. We question her and question her. And now I'm afraid I lose my job. Forget my job. I told her, you pay union dues? That you be we? Well, I said, you're a union member. Got a mouth? Got a tongue? You're not satisfied? Come to the union office. Oh, but mon Dieu, je veux pas déranger. She said, you are not deranging me when you come. Mais tu me déranges quand tu ne viens pas. Parce que je ne sais pas qu'est-ce qui se passe. Oh, ben. Vous savez, Madame Robach, je ne veux pas vous déranger. And I said, what are you afraid of? You pay my salary to help you, and you're afraid to come. Oh, well, they won't like it. I said, do you like what's happening to you now? No. And I said, you're not prepared to do something about it? Well, I don't know. I said, look, I cannot promise you anything, but I will do the very best I can. and you don't have to be afraid. In unity there is strength. And that's how we were able to get the people not to be afraid and to get the people to know that they're paying part of the salary of the union person. They are entitled to service. And the door is always open after you knock.
United we stand, divided we fall. For every dime they give us, a battle must be fought. So working people, use your power, the key to liberty. Don't support that rich man's style of luxury.
Long and sometimes arduous climb for Marielle Rousseau. It all began 5 years ago with an endless, lonely round of dressmaking plants looking for work. Then, having found an employer, facing still the unexpected formalities of union membership in a first suspicious meeting with organized labor. Name and surname? Age and address? Marielle's the name. Marielle Rousseau. Got a job. Need a union card. What about other interests, talents, ambitions? What for? Just a moment. Would Marielle perhaps be interested in a program of self-improvement? Dozens of her fellow workers will be taking part in the union's courses in dancing or language, drama, cooking, or psychology.
Well, the power wheel is rolling, rolling, right along, and the government helps keep it going, going strong.
Finally learned that coming to the union was not a terrible thing, and if there were things we couldn't do, and we told them we don't make miracles, but whenever it's a logical demand, higher pay, less hours. And I told the workers, you come and tell me, I'll handle that guy. And I did. I've got a big mouth, and I was never, even when I was that, I was never afraid. We would see to it that the workers would give a good day's work without breaking their necks and getting sick. They had to produce a certain amount, not exaggerated, but instead, before the union, they had to produce 20-22%. They couldn't keep that up, so they would be absent. And if you're not at work, you don't get paid. So some of them, they were so exhausted, they just gave up the job. And so we told that to the manager of the company. You're stupid. I told him, I said, you're a stupid man. You force the workers to work so fast and that they're not doing a good job for you. I don't care whether you care or not, but you're not getting the production and the type of production you should. So get your time study man to hell out with his pen and his paper. And he said, well, there won't be any checking. I said, the workers are adults. They can produce so much, no more. And they're not kidding you, because the union has signed a contract. You will get good work, and you will pay them a decent pay, and your time study man does not have to stand there and watch the work. They don't need a spy. And that's what he is. So I said, you tell your time study man to get the hell out. A worker is as honest as you will trust them. And if you don't trust them, then you'll get nothing. And you know, we worked a whole week my way, our way, the union way. And of course it worked. Some unions are not strong enough. But we had a strong union. We told the workers, if you're afraid, then the union can do nothing for you. But if there is a complaint, and a reasonable complaint, like for example, they could not go to the bathroom during the day. So I told them, he said, this is my factory and I run it. And you don't have to tell me how to run my business. I said, okay. The union will not let you get any workers because we had a closed shop. So I said, you don't want to see me, I don't want to see you. But you will never get any workers for this factory. And we kept it. So finally...
You went on strike?
Well, we didn't call it a strike. We said, we walked out.
Which side are you on? 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 Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell.
Didn't win them all, but we certainly had at least a 75% better pay and, more important, better conditions of work. Why, they used to work 10, 12, 15 hours a day. They'd go home, they were exhausted, they couldn't eat. So that changed. An 8-hour day, that was good. And the workers always said, if we hadn't had the union, we'd still be working for peanuts. And that's how, bit by bit, the union made improvements. And it was necessary.
Then, suddenly, Marielle saw about her the symbols of what she achieved in 5 years through personal effort and the cooperation of union and industry. Recognition of efficiency at work, security in job and pay and social benefits, full acceptance by her fellow workers, and spontaneous approval of her blossoming personality.
After successfully unionizing the garment factory, Leah went on to unionize workers at the RCA Victor factory and would continue to work with the labor movement for decades to come. Her commitment to social justice would extend beyond workers' rights to include women's rights and the peace movement as well. Even after her official retirement, she continued to be a fixture on picket lines, well into her 80s. When I spoke to her, she was already in her late 90s, but it was clear that age had not diminished her fervor.
We must never forget that we are alone here in this world, and we've got only myself. I have no time to look after them. We have to find time. You're old. We're all, sure, I'm old too. It doesn't mean that because you're old that your brain is kaput. It's there, but you've got to use it. There's a big world out there. Things are happening. I march against wars. I can't do it alone. But if you come, and the others come, and we go to the governments, and we say, we have brought children into the world, not to go and fight for some country who wants more wealth, more power. It's a difficult task. But out there, there are people like me, like millions of others in every country, and they're out there marching. In unity, there is strength.
This interview was recorded in 1999. In August of 2000, Leah Roback passed away. But her legacy, her determination, lives on through the countless lives that she touched.
But the union makes us strong. Solidarity.
Solidarity forever.
Solidarity.
This piece was written and produced by Melanie Levitt for CKUT. More information on Leah Roback and Canadian labor history is available at the NFB, whose Camera on Labor series was used in this production. A full-length documentary film on Leah Roback's life, titled Des Lumières dans la Grande Noirceur, produced by Sophie Bissonnette, is available through Production Virage.
Solidarity forever.
Solidarity.
Solidarity forever.
Solidarity
forever.
For the union
makes us strong.
In our hands is placed a power greater than the heart it goes, greater than the might of armies, magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to world a new world from the ashes of the old. For the union makes us strong. Solidarity.
Solidarity.